My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast.
Hello, welcome to the pod post Japan. Our look back at Suzuka, the Japanese Grand Prix. Joining me this week, psychic Perry Hamilton.
Hello.
And that's, I can still call you that. We'll delve into that in part two, obviously. But
yeah,
we can still call
you
that.
I'm excited.
Kyle Cumbers is here. Hi, Kyle.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm very well. Yourself?
Yeah, not bad at all.
Good,
nice
good.
To see you. Nice to see you arriving in the Beamer. It's always good. Oh, you never know which car
turned
it's
up in
be.
Style today, has he?
Yeah. I steal them. I mean,
oh,
we do wonder. It does a different car each week, and apparently they're always going to be yours soon.
Possibly.
Does your dad listen to this pod?
Possibly.
Dad, have a word. Right. Japan. It was a race. It was an actual race. If you play the normal game of ignoring the leader, stroke Sebastian Vettel, that would normally work. But it didn't work this time because he was in the middle.
You'd have missed out on a lot if you decided to ignore the leader of this race.
I enjoyed it. And Suzuka just delivers, doesn't it?
Oh, every time. Every time. It's such a fantastic race. And the beautiful thing about it for me is where it's placed in the calendar. Because I think there are a few of us, myself included, and I know some people that I've spoken to as well, that were saying, has Formula One lost its luster for us a little bit? Are we a little bit bored by it? Are we a little bit jaded? Has it become predictable? Is Sebastian Vettel? And then bam, you drop Suzuka in there and suddenly this classic track, so much history, the drivers love it, so much tension. And of course, it's really nice after Korea and some of those places to see jam-packed stadiums and people clamouring for a sight of this, you know, fantastically wonderful sport that we spend our lives, you know, enjoying. And it reminds you why you do love racing. It's fantastic.
It's brilliant. Apparently, all the drivers were getting on pretty well. There was a nice, relaxed atmosphere around the place. And also, before they closed the stands, not that I've picked all this up from the BBC Five Live podcast, but apparently, before they used to close the stands in the evening, the fans would just sit there watching the mechanics all through the night. They'd literally just lap up as much as possible. Japan loves Formula One.
Well, actually, even on the first day, I think, when they were setting up and stuff, the grandstands are full. I think they even allowed them to walk the track as well, and all the, obviously, the engineers and drivers are going as well. But that's a huge part of the Suzuka weekend is the fans, because it's crazy. And their random headwear and clothing, you know, every supports a different team, and I mean, they follow, like, you know, I'm a Max Chilton fan, no best of Max. But yeah, they follow anybody, and yeah, a big part of the weekend is the fans.
Even Max Chilton, who had a good weekend, we'll get stuck into that. Yeah, brilliant stuff. I mean, they won't have booed Sebastian Vettel on the podium. A, he's a bit of a god out there at the moment, and B, you know, you cheer Formula One success.
That's exactly success it. The fans have so much respect for the sport, and I think that's why the sport has respect for Japan as a country and as a track, and just everything that they do and what they represent. And of course, let's not forget, you know, as a country, they're going to have huge representation in Formula One next year, the year after.
Honda.
With Honda, you know, taking on one of the key names in Formula One at McLaren. So they are coming back into it, and there's, you know, that's going to bring endorsement opportunities. You know, Japan's favourite non-Japanese son in Jenson Button going to be living out there as well, and going crazy with that. So, you know, it's going to be great for them.
Maybe Kamui's fund will get him a seat next year.
It was nice to see Kamui get some FaceTime on the TV though. It was really, really good to see him there, and always looks happy, always looks engaged, and I do think we missed him in the paddock this year.
I want to limit how much we talk about Seb, because I think we'll be talking about him quite a lot, especially next time out. But it's interesting how he can seemingly win a race from any situation. This time he needed to dig in with the strategy, but still looked imperious. It's his ninth win now, 11th was his tally in his most dominant of seasons, and there's still four races to go.
Yeah, it was good to see him actually. It's a bit harsh saying earn it, but
earn it.
Yeah, it's come from a position where he wasn't off at the front and, you know, keeping the 10-second gap or whatever he likes. So yeah, I mean, there's theories that maybe Red Bull wanted it that way and had the strategies in a certain way, so he would win. But no, but it's good to see him push. And he's making little mistakes as well, which is also good to see. But it wasn't a comfortable weekend for him, which is good, in the way it should be.
And it's still a man who can recover from them. That's the thing. The start was fantastic, although both Red Bulls really didn't have a very good start, which probably made it so. I mean, you have to say Seb got the luck. I mean, he had a few mechanical issues over the weekend, but he got the luck in terms of him clipping Lewis, and while he got a little bit of damage, it was Lewis's race there.
Yeah, it was Lewis's race done, and it was a shame because Lewis was looking tidy, actually, and you know he likes the track, and the car was looking strong. And the interesting fact was that's Lewis Hamilton's only retirement this year.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, going to a Mercedes team when the move was announced, I mean, we all sat here and shook. I mean, I know I did. I sat here and shook my head and said, no, not the move for Lewis, not the thing to make. And then you look at the performance that Mercedes has put in. And I think too much has been made about Mercedes sort of looking at, okay, they're fantastically quick in qualifying. They made a rod for their own back there, because when they don't replicate that pace, or they can't replicate that pace during the race on Sunday, we kind of go, oh, Mercedes have had a drop off and they don't know what they're doing. But actually, they're incredibly reliable cars. And they've made it round, not always necessarily in the points, not always on podiums, but they are finishing races. And every time you can finish a race and bring a car home intact, that's a wonderful thing for the team. With regards to him clipping Seb, it's a racing incident. But the killer is that as a... Those of you who remember the podcast, which had a lot of bleeps at the beginning, thanks to Michael, these things never happen to Seb. It's always to the person that he clips into. So, you know, when it does happen to him, it's an act of God. But it was just the luck of the draw and the way it went. But you've got to credit Hamilton for doing typical Hamilton. Gutsy move, straight up there.
Brilliant stuff.
You know, do or die. And on this occasion, it was the latter.
Death.
Yeah, it's also a shame, because he looked like he was going to get second. And obviously, there's a good... race based on strategy, but it would have been interesting as well to have a Mercedes at the front as well to see what Red Bull did then. And I don't know if he could have kept the pace like the Red Bulls and Grosjean, but yeah, it would have been.
I don't think he would have been anywhere near as kind on his tyres as the Red Bulls and especially the Lotus were. So that would be it would be an interesting one. So would you let him loose? Would you let him just, you know, get ahead, and once you're ahead, then that's job done, because that Mercedes was quick car.
There's so many little bits I want to tuck into. Let's just stay with Mercedes, because the key thing I always find is that at some point during the race weekend, if there's a big sort of feature by either BBC or Sky with a team or a driver, they tend to have a really bad weekend off the back of that. And as soon as Rosberg and Hamilton were sat down doing their little rather awkward co-interview on the BBC, I kind of felt, yeah, this probably isn't going to go very well this weekend, and it didn't, did it? It was a bit of a nightmare for Mercedes, really. Steve Hamilton's run ending of finishing every race, and Rosberg sort of fading away.
Yeah, he didn't do badly, but he didn't do wonderfully. He was overshadowed by another German driver named Nico. So as he has been the last couple of races, actually, I think, but that's, I don't think you can really put that on Nico. They're still having the same problem we mentioned before. You know, race, they can command a race from the beginning, but can they come up through the pack? I don't think they can at the moment. But when we talk about it in the long game, obviously Mercedes have given up on the Drivers' Championship this year. They're pretty much out of it for the Constructors' Championship as well. It's going to be a long haul for them to get any significant level of points now. But the progress they made from last year to where they are now is outstanding, and if they can replicate even just half of that again, you're going to be looking at a really strong team. So not great for Mercedes this weekend yet. The BBC kiss of death, always a good thing. You know, but as Kyle said, if, you know, Hamilton had got up into second, we would have seen a different race, but he would have been the difference maker, I think, not so much Rosberg.
It's a really interesting Constructors Championship battle, really, isn't there, between Ferrari, Lotus and Mercedes. That is one thing, battle for second place. There's a lot of money involved in those three different places.
Yeah, and it'll be a huge achievement for, like, for Mercedes to get fifth last year and the Constructors to second. But yeah, so it's the same old, well, not just taking Vettelheim, but take Red Bull out of the Constructors.
Yeah, works for all manner of,
yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Kyle with his efficient iPad usage there, and the paper is no more. We're mourning the loss of the paper. Let's take it back to Red Bull, shall we? I want to mention Romain Grosjean, my man who I said I think the weekend was most important for, if I remember, last weekend. I'm pretty sure that was what I said. And in,
you know, points,
delivering, that boy is delivering. A year on from the same race where Mark Webber called him a first lap nutcase, he was the man who overtook the pole sitter on the first lap, and for
very
a while
cleanly.
It looked like a brilliant start.
Yeah,
never quite had it to finish ahead of both of them. That was the shame. But I'm, you know, for me, he's starting to deliver.
And I think it might have been Ben Edwards on the BBC made a very astute observation when he said this
turnaround from Grosjean has come pretty much from the moment that Kimi Raikkonen announced he would be driving for another team next year. Now, whether that's going to have any kind of effect, maybe that was the kind of thing where Roman thought, oh, good Lord, you know, we're put on notice. If they're going to ship Kimi and he's a world champion, God knows what they're going to do with me. I need to drive and earn my seat. Or maybe it was, okay, they got rid of Kimi. I know I'm set next year. A little bit more relaxing. There isn't that sort of, pun intended, icy atmosphere, because I can't imagine that he's the kind of guy who's going to sit down and have a you know, chat and a laugh with Roman. He's not going to take Roman under his wing. And maybe that makes Roman, because Roman always seems to be a very nice and genial kind of chap, maybe that is the kind of thing where it makes Roman feel a little bit awkward. But now he knows he's not going to be there next year, and anyone who comes into that team now is going to come in with Roman as the established driver, assuming Roman stays there for next year, which he's making a great case to do. So now Roman's got that satisfaction of sitting there and going, well, technically, unless they go out and sign someone unparalleled awesomeness, he's going to be their number one guy. And that must give him that sort of certain boost to be able to, okay, do you know what? Forget about the future. Just relax. Enjoy the next 5-6 races, as he was back then, and put your foot down. Let's see what we can do. We can see what he can do now, which is great.
I'm pretty sure Roman is sorted for next season at Lotus, but still.
Yeah, he's. I think, as you said, he's sort of since Raikkonen's decided to leave. Maybe sort of the team has naturally gone towards him, and you know, he's the main man, and he's feeling loved, and yeah, he's getting confidence from that, and he's, you know, this was his second full season.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's maybe all. It's no time. You know, he's shown his real potential.
Doing more than De Resta. now. I mean, Grosjean battled hard, but I think he didn't have the pace maybe to certainly compete with Vettel. It was a slightly different matter with Webber, who did come in for his final stop when I said he needed to. I was like, Webber really needs to come in now if he's going to make this work. And then Webber did come in, just got stuck behind Grosjean for too long, really didn't need to challenge Vettel, which was unfortunate. Why was Mark doing a three-stopper when two-stopper was quicker? I really don't understand.
I don't think I'm the person to ask there, in all honesty.
I really don't. I mean, presumably they thought he couldn't look after his tyres well enough from the offset, but...
Historically, he's been harder on his tyres. So I don't know. And I think before they were sort of saying it's in between the two and a free stop. I think part of the problem was, it was all right going a free stop, because I think that helped get past Grosjean and confuse the Lotus team. But like, as you said, I think he still thought halfway through the race that he was still on the two stop. And if they had told him, OK, we're doing a free stop, he maybe could have pushed it various points, and you know, it could have been closer. So I think, I don't know if they, you know, they done it so Vettel would win.
Dare you, Carl, surely not.
Yeah, I think if they'd have planned and said yes, a free stop, then fine, and that may have worked out better. But they sort of in between the two. So
I say, of course they planned it so Vettel could win. I know we joke about it, and Michael's there with his faux level of disbelief, but you know, do you really think this close, this far into the season, with Vettel holding the lead, that he would, that they would go, oh, Malaysia, do you know what? Move over and let Mark win. Do you think Vettel would have? For a guy that's not going to be there next year? Come on, you know, this is all Korth playing into their hands.
I imagine it was quite an interesting debrief they had after the actual race with Webber. Interesting, just last point on Grosjean, obviously outdoing Kimi again, both in qualifying and in race. And in fact, I think there was a little graphic on the BBC coverage that pretty much proved that Grosjean had in fact been quicker over the season so far in races than Raikkonen somehow.
Are you just trying to justify your own?
No, I'm just saying
your own shout of Grosjean as a dark horse from the beginning of the season.
Yes, it was a surprise actually that it was that close. It surprised me when you consider that the guy he's up against is going to be driving for Ferrari next year. It'd be very interesting where Lotus find themselves at the moment. Obviously, a lot of talent going out of the team. They're trying to sort out investment going into next year and beyond. Whether they're going to have a race-winning car next year is probably quite a moot point. EDP F1 pit stop time! You like that?
I'm 50-50 on it.
I feel like I have to mix it up every week.
It's
different. Some work, some don't. I don't think that one worked. Let's start off at Sauber, because they are in some cracking form at the moment. Esteban Gutierrez picked up his first points of the season. 6 of them, I think, wasn't it?
Pretty solid.
Quite a few
of
them.
Yeah.
I'm trying to work out how many points 7th position is.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
And as we've already touched on, Nico Hülkenberg is just on fire. Should he maybe start considering staying at Sauber next year? Especially if Lotus do have a few issues.
I don't know. It's an interesting one because he jumped to Sauber just when Force India were showing signs of life and last season, and you know, signs of being quite a solid team. And I remember I remember saying, you know, Nico's made the wrong choice here, Sauber on the way down, and I think Force India will be the team to make that big jump next year. Well, you know, I don't think either of them particularly were impressive. Force India have been dire this year. I don't think there's any other word for it. In terms of Nico, you've got to go to the team with, I don't know, the team with the hot hand. And at the moment, which team has a race win under their belt this season? It's Lotus. And so for me, if you've got an opportunity to go to a race winning team, you know, you take it.
Bizarrest thing for me is that Eddie Jordan decided that Nico Hülkenberg is going back to Force India.
He's quite confident as well.
And yeah, which strikes me as a bizarre idea.
Yeah. And also, Sky was saying he's going to Lotus, so who to believe?
Eddie,
I mean,
Eddie.
Lotus is the one, but yeah, his, you know, past predictions have been good. But yeah, the drive does come available at Lotus, that's the one to take. But it would be a strange move to go back to Force India after that. Yeah, after he left. And to be honest, I don't know if he's got a choice if he's going to stay at Sauber. I think he's on his way out for...
Mm-hmm. Sorokin's got to come in, hasn't
yes.
he? Sergei Sorokin, who's a lot younger than all of us lot. But yeah, it's driven about as much as all of us. Anyway, that's another matter. Now, one of the things I enjoyed was what I've called Trafficado Jam. When Daniel Ricciardo, I've called him Ricciardo for this pun. Daniel Ricciardo. Sorry, I have the world's most squeaky chair, by the way, if that keeps coming through. Daniel Ricciardo held up just about everyone on the grid, I think. 7 cars I've got here. There was a bit of a Massa and Gutierrez battle going on at the same time, but that was quite amusing watching him hold everyone up.
Well, yeah, he's holding everyone up, but technically all you have to do is hold up one person before you then stop holding everyone up and everyone starts battling. So everyone behind you, if they've got someone caught up to their backside, then all they're going to be concerned about is keeping that person off of them rather than trying to get ahead of you. So once you block one person, then yeah, you don't... Really, it's their responsibility to get past you. Ricciardo did the right thing. Ricciardo did what was necessary to work his strategy for his tyres. That's what he'd been told to do. I don't think the Toro Rossos were particularly storming this weekend, but I don't think they were terrible. I think they had a good speed. They're always a good, solid middle-of-the-road car. The reason Ricciardo was going slowly was purely because that was what his strategy was, and so he had to stay out for as long as he could by keeping those guys behind him. Absolutely brilliant, worked wonderfully well for him. So yeah, it doesn't end, you know, there's a lot of people out there now who'll be looking at that and going, oh, he's gonna have a Red Bull seat next year, and look at how bad he was in Japan. It's like, I don't think anyone really expects him, just because someone has said to him, you're going to drive a Red Bull next year, there's no way he's putting that Toro Rosso on the podium, not this season. Utterly not. So
he was quite angry as well, wasn't he? Because he got penalised drive through for going around the outside of, I think it was a Force India.
It was, yeah, I can't remember which one.
Can't remember which one it was. Around 130R.
Yes.
And yeah. Going out off the track. He was quite angry because he felt he should have been allowed to carry on, but really I don't think he had any reason to. If you muck up the move and end up off the track, four wheels off the track.
Yeah, it's always, it's a bit unlucky in a way, because the Force India then went into the pitch straight away, so he couldn't let the place back.
Yeah, in that case, that's a fair
point.
Yeah,
and I think he argued he actually lost more time by going wide. I think it's always a difficult one as well. Because
at that point, I think, though, time becomes irrelevant. It's about gaining track advantage,
yeah.
And he did come out on ahead of the Force India on the track. So whether he'd lost time or not,
team
is irrelevant.
Should have helped him out really straight away.
Oh yeah, the team should have immediately. If it's questionable, if there's even a doubt, the team should be on the radio going, do you know what? Give it back. You've got round him once. We know you're quicker. You can do it again.
Exactly.
Not a problem. But I completely agree with you there, Michael. You're quite right.
Poor Daniel. I don't know if his strategy really helped him out. I'm pretty sure the team, they seemed to be trying to keep him out for a one stop, and then it wasn't working. But they sort of kept him out anyway, and he ended up getting a bit stodgy and stuck in the middle. But Daniel will have plenty more chances, as we know, especially next year. Caterham, we have to mention them, but in truth, that's about all I can say. It's another race gone without picking up 10th place in the championship from Arusha. Races are running out. Hingham guys, come on. Bit of good news for McLaren, not on the track. Obviously, they were hideous again. Peter Prodromu.
Well done.
Is that right? I don't know if that's right. He's one of the design chiefs at Red Bull. He'll be joining McLaren next year. So that's possibly good news. It was a headline-grabbing appointment, said McLaren, before they actually announced it. And they've got more to come, they say. Maybe Ross Brawn. I doubt it.
I'd be very surprised.
I would be very surprised.
I would be very surprised if Ross Brawn went to a team where he didn't have a huge amount of autonomy to run the way he wanted, and I don't see McLaren getting rid of Martin Whitmarsh anytime soon.
All great prospects, you'd have to say. McLaren are going to be in a horrible position next year. I just can't see how it's how it's a good position to have Mercedes cast-offs for a year waiting for Honda to arrive in 12 months' time.
A year in limbo.
Exactly, it's going to be a year in limbo, and for God knows what that means they were in this year. Williams drivers weren't very happy. There was a bit of a late move and it all got nasty, and Valtteri Bottas wasn't very happy with Pastor Maldonado, and that's all going rather well, isn't it, at Grove?
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, if the Williams were a top flight team this year and they'd had a few podiums between them and they were doing very well, I don't think anyone would care. I think it's literally the fact that, you know, we're down at the bottom, we're pretty crap at the moment, and it's getting chippy, and that's what it is. I mean, if you equate it to something that I know you're very acquainted with, Michael, in terms of, you know, Premier League football, if you've got teams that aren't doing particularly well and the game's going very sluggishly and the whole thing's crappy and their teams don't particularly, you know, getting on because there's that friction and that tension towards the end of a season, games are going to start getting chippy and people are going to start being a little bit more shovey and pushy with it, and they're going to react harsher. So
certainly.
But if everything's going, you know, swimmingly great and wonderful, then no one's going to complain. So I think it's more a reflection on their status of this season than the actual move. The move itself was wonderful. You know, good to see a little bit of late race excitement.
Exactly.
Which I will come to more on later.
Oh, here we go. And final mention for Max Chilton, because he out-qualified all of the newer, younger boys, younger teams in qualifying. And a remarkable say, he's brought the car home every week.
Yeah, weekend. He's the only one to do it now. Cause
so, Amazon. I mean, he's... Hmm. Doing something that no one else is.
Yeah, and I was really pleased for him because he's interviewed afterwards and he seemed really pleased. And I thought, yeah, you know, well done. You know, at least he's not, you know, smashing his car up and ripping up front wings. He's, you know, he's bringing it home, getting experience from every race and as much experience as he can get. And I think he deserves next year, and it'll be good to see him and Bianchi next year and see if he can compete with him more weekends.
It's that old saying, isn't it, to finish first you have to finish, and at the moment Max is finishing. Hey, it could be a long way until we see him finishing first, but he's finishing.
Exactly. I got the impression if Eddie Jordan was still owning a team, he'd be signing Max Chilton up for next year with the glint in his eye. Okay, it's time for our of the weekend debates. We start as always with driver and goat. Still don't really understand why it's goat. Is there a reason why it's goat of the weekend for what's rubbish?
I've no idea.
No, I think we just came up with it, didn't we?
It's a term I've heard used. You know, if you make a fool of yourself, you're a bit of a goat.
Love it.
That's all it
it's
is.
It's good enough. Well,
not to be, of course, confused with the acronym greatest of all time. So that's not what we're talking about here. Talking about the greatest of all time.
Rubbish.
We're talking about someone who's made an absolute idiot of themselves. Yeah.
Bar.
They do. They kind of bar. Yeah.
Anyway, this really is going off at a tangent when we're short on time. Driver of the weekend, Roman. For me, obviously, I would say that.
Agreed.
So, agreed.
As completely freely passed.
I love it. Yeah, well, we'll take that then. Goat.
Do you know, I'm thinking about this one, and I think a lot of people had a really good race, and I don't think that there was anyone out there who made an absolute idiot of themselves.
Even Paul de Resta finished.
Precisely. You know, he did very, very well. So I think I'm going to give goat of the week to Korea, who have just been shown how to do it by Japan. So Korea, even though nothing was going on with you this week, you get goat of the week because Japan have really just shown you up about how to do Formula One in the Far East.
Lovely. Kyle?
The only thing I could think of is, I don't actually see it properly, but whoever caused the collision between Van der Gaard and Bianchi.
Yeah, it's in Bianchi at the start, yeah.
So whoever caused that collision.
Yeah.
Fair
enough. Or the cameraman who didn't quite catch it, because we still haven't really seen it. Mine was the person who told Webber to do a three-stop or not, just commit to a two-stop. It's a stupid idea. Team?
I'm going to give that one to Sauber. Great progression from them, and both cars in the points, so absolutely great work. Very solid run, you know, and they do very well. Traditionally, they do very well at Japan, and so another good turnout for them.
Having a very good second half of the season.
Yeah, agree completely. Yeah,
got that written down. Okay, and highlight.
I got two.
Excellent.
I got two, and I wonder if you guys have the same ones that I have.
Well,
my first highlight, Fernando Alonso. Long admired as one of the greatest skills behind the wheel in a Formula One car. Goes around the outside on one of the most pant-wetting corners on the calendar at 130R and makes the move stick. And I'm there, and my heart's in my mouth just watching this moment. And he does it so smooth as silk and so beautifully done. You just think, hey, that's pure Spanish flair and ability. You're not going to get better than that. Oh, ho, 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 my friend. Towards the very end of the race, Kimi Raikkonen, not to be outdone by his future teammate, goes around the outside at the turn-in to the final chicane and makes, and I don't think I've ever seen a non-backmarker overtake move there. I've only ever seen people getting lapped at that point and they get right out of the way. And that was just pure ice-cold precision. And you know, in that under his helmet, he didn't even blink. Just pure, impassive face of stone and granite. And I mean, it was amazing. They were my highlight. And as you can tell, I was very excited by them. I thought they were fantastic. Both of those moves. You think, God, you can't beat 130 around the outside. Oh my God, what's Kimi doing? That's astounding. It was great. They were wonderful moves, both of them.
What a tee up for teammates next year as well.
I was struggling for highlights, but I went for Felipe Massa for kind of ignoring team orders, but finally stood up and he's going to
get on
with himself and screw Ferrari.
You know? I like that.
Yeah, so that's my highlight.
Although we did get past, I mean, presumably we then have to assume that he's just not very good because Fernando Alonso went past him really easily. And if he didn't have the excuse of being told to get out of the way.
Was that part of the Ricardo traffic?
Yes, I think it might have been, that's right. Yeah, it might have been.
Yeah.
I loved the start. It just felt like we had a proper start. We haven't had one of those for a while. Yeah. The way Lewis went about it, Roman start, and again, 12 months on from where he, you know, had all those issues and Weber launched into him, I thought that was cracking irony. So there we go. Brilliant stuff. All right, then, well, we'll give it to yours, Ped. As passionately said. I love
Thank
it.
You. Thank you.
Right, then, we'll wrap this up. We'll be back soon with our India preview. Until then, you can get hold of us all on Twitter, should you so wish. I am Michael J. Bailey. Kyle?
I'm at Kcumbers.
Ped. I'm at PedHD56.
And there's the EDP Formula One Twitter feed, which is at EDPF1. The Facebook page, facebook.com/EDPF1. And edp24.co.uk/F1 for your Lotus and Caterham news, my weekly column, and this very podcast. As I said, we'll be back to look at the delights of India, where Sebastian Vettel may well become a four-time world champion. How about that? Bye for now.